You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It is the Anfield Wrap. Neil Atkinson with Dave Lynch, with Kev Walsh and with Rob Gutman, talking about Rob Gutman, the best football team in the world.
Aye, we were really good again, weren't we? You keep expecting us not to be really good and then we're really
Why
good.
Why do you keep expecting us not to be really good?
Just because I'm a fatalistic fan who's been let down and disappointed a lot over the last 30 years, and it'll take me a long time to become undamaged. But what I'm enjoying particularly about this incarnation...
That doubts us to believe his thing's not really happening, was it?
I'll get there. No, I'm very much a believer, but also, if it means a lot, the more it means to you, the more you can't afford to be relaxed about it. I never get, I'm relaxed. Of course I'm not relaxed.
I was not relaxed last night.
No, I'm not. It feels like every game we're playing, we're like, we're the greatest heavyweight boxer of all time, but they're putting up against us the next best every time. We have to knock them out and show the pretenders. Even frigging Villa come as the next greatest boxer of all time. We've got to knock Villa, two on the bounce.
You're going to be a basket case when we go to Goodison.
Oh, tell me about it. Oh. Jesus Christ.
Meet your mate. I'm already worried about that one, me.
Yeah, I know. With the, this 80s heavyweights clash. When Everton come, it's good that we're not going to real Goodison, though. I know we said that before the lockdown. I'm enjoying no crowds in a certain sort of way.
You don't have to. Are you happy about not going to real Villa Park, or would you rather go to real Villa
Park? I'd like to go, but I'm glad I wouldn't like the rest of them there.
So just you.
Yeah, just me.
You and the boys.
Me and the lads. I don't want our crowd to be nervy and spoil it, and I don't want the opposition crowd to be up for it and spoil it. So I realise crowds spoil it. I know that's not a popular take.
It's not a popular take, and in fact it is an incorrect one. There was, before kickoff, Dave, there was pressure on Liverpool. City losing and us playing a side with two good results both this season and against the Reds suggested there was a bit of pressure on Liverpool. In the same way, though, that, for instance, when you saw them walk out at Chelsea, you got the impression within 3 or 4 minutes, up for it's almost the wrong way to phrase it, because all football teams are up for it, but that Liverpool had a steely focus that was very reminiscent of last season prior to COVID hitting.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone else had sort of worked themselves into this position, but I'd sort of convinced myself that because City had lost, that if Liverpool won yesterday, that the title was wrapped up. So it's done, it's done now.
Yeah, I thought that.
So yeah, you can relax now, it's done. I don't know, it felt massive, and we just, there was that element of feeling about, had Arsenal worked out a way to beat this Liverpool team? You know, had they dropped off since, all the talk going into the season was about the idea that Liverpool haven't quite looked the same, and Arsenal were a team who'd looked like they'd been able to sort of expose that and show that up, and, could they, not necessarily be in the mix for the title this season, but have made improvements to sort of drag Liverpool slightly more back into the pack this season, but it just didn't look like that at all. Arsenal took the lead and they looked better throughout the game than they have in recent seasons at Anfield, I thought, by a long way, in terms of a lot more cohesive and aggressive in the press and things like that. But Liverpool just completely toyed with them. The fact that Gary Neville said, didn't he, on commentary, that the first half an hour was the most impressive half an hour of football he'd seen this season from any team, and I think that was you know, a fair way of summing it up. And I thought Liverpool can continue throughout that vein. They were fantastic. So it was just you know, a really good early test, and they've had three very different early tests, all of which they've come out of looking like champions. Which, you know, I'm getting ahead of the game there slightly, but I just think they've been brilliant, and last night was no different.
They play against Arsenal at the Emirates, and it goes the way it goes with the mistakes, Kev. They then play the Community Shield, and the much better second half. But then part of that is the Minamino sub, change the shape, etc., etc. I was wondering whether or not he might change the shape or normal approach prior to kickoff. But if anything, first half, Liverpool just did what Liverpool do, but backed themselves even more. And I think that this is a fascinating bit of management. You know, we're not going to adapt to what they've done to us in the past. What we're going to do is we're going to go absolutely all in on what we do really well.
Yeah, I think it's just go for muscle memory against every team. But just because Arsenal have had they're just a couple of lucky results, really. The one at the Emirates last year, you'll never get a game like that again where those two players give those two goals away. So you can sort of park down. Obviously, we'd already won the league, so there's nobody worrying there. The Charity Shield, and is anyone nearly that bothered? I don't think they are. And I think, as you say, with the change of shape, Klopp already knows then that I've got their number. So even if they do something in the first half an hour that makes me think, oh, they're doing something right here, I've still got a plan B in my back pocket that I can go to. But the players we've got, and I think it was a good game for Keita, because before the match, I think there was probably a lot of people saying, oh, he's the one I'd probably leave out, and maybe I'd just tweak a few things here and there. But he played really well. And I think, as we discussed before, he's the one that done the dirty work that needed doing. When I think, and by the dirty work, I mean our right-hand channel and doing all the doggies there that don't necessarily get you the plaudits from everybody, but it's exactly what needed to be done in order to keep Aubameyang quiet, because he's been their main man. And I think a game like that for him, it's not something I thought he had in him, really, if I'm totally honest. I thought he's easy on the eye sometimes, but then when he's not easy on the eye, he's absolutely horrible on the eye sometimes. But that's a game where he's done everything that's been asked of him under the radar, and I was made up for him for that.
That's really interesting that Kev's gone there that early on it, to be honest with you, Rob, because I couldn't agree more. I think there was a few people I could see some comments, or it was like he was invisible, and I felt like saying, yeah, but we've praised Gini Wijnaldum for a lot of this sort of stuff, and I think that Keita there, that's the performance for me. I think he's absolutely, Aubameyang barely kicks it over the course of the game in a meaningful sense, and I think that Trent Alexander-Arnold plays brilliantly. But I think another major reason why is that Naby Keita does a really, really classy job for the team.
Yeah, he's an auxiliary right back for a lot of the game. He's behind Trent Alexander-Arnold. I know our fullbacks are pushed up, but it's almost a conscious thing. Like, Trent, you're right midfield, I'm your right back, covering behind you. It was fascinating. There has been this sort of myth of a misconception, I think, about Naby from when he arrived. I think a lot of people had seen his highlights and thought he's a bit of a Phil Coutinho, maybe a bit more, slightly more muscular version of it. But, you know, I'd watched him a lot in Leipzig, and often they were playing him in the six. He's very much, in the Premier League, okay, he didn't look straight away cut out to be a defensive midfield player. And I think Thiago might struggle like that, although he looks excellent, like for Spain and maybe in the Bundesliga as a defensive midfielder. I think it might take him a while, longer than people think. I'm not sure. But Naby can do the dark arts. I thought he was fascinating yesterday, as Kev says. He grew into the game. Quite first 10 minutes, you wonder what's he doing. But as you said, the Wijnaldum comparison is absolutely spot on. I decided to properly watch Wijnaldum. You know, you find yourself thinking, what did Ginny do? He must have done it right, though. I didn't know what he did. I actually watched what he did, and it was all really wonderful. Beautifully understated, but it was fantastic. And Keita was this similar performance.
It's one, Dave, where, again, because there isn't, and I've done a little thing. I've looked at everything he's done over the game on StatsBomb. I've sort of done a little retrospective thing, and it's what's really interesting is how much of it is not very long distance. So he picks it up and carries it, but he rarely carries it more than 10 yards. He's passing the ball, gets the ball a lot, gets on it a lot, but very rarely moves it more than 10 yards. The sort of very progressive football that you often see from him, he doesn't show. And to me, that looks entirely like instruction. I refuse to believe that a footballer who wants to play forward, who wants to carry the ball, doesn't do it because he's having a bit of an off day. He doesn't do it because the manager said, can you not even try that today? It's not like he's trying and failing. He just wasn't doing it at all. And I think it was all instruction. For that was his job for that game.
Yeah, it's sort of mad that he's nothing like the player that you sort of, you know, particularly with the hype that was around him when he signed, he's not playing anywhere near that sort of football that we saw in those YouTube clips, those, you know, snaking past three or four players and sort of taking shots. You know, he doesn't even get shots off that often or necessarily be the man who provides the assist. He's not doing that. And as Neil puts it, really, that's not the job that's being asked of him. What I'm massively impressed by is his ability, you know, the things that we didn't necessarily expect from him is his ability to sort of block passing lanes in the boring way that Genie Wine Album does on the other side, and you know that real sort of the stuff that Jurgen Klopp really values. I mean, about Aubameyang and him being on that side, every time Klopp gets asked before Liverpool play against a team, you've got a forward who's, you know, world class ability, and he gets asked it a lot. You know, how do you stop this player? How do you stop Harry Kane? How do you stop an Aubameyang? Anyone like that, Lewandowski? He always talks about blocking the pass into them, and that was Keita's job yesterday, and he did it brilliantly, among other things. You know, thought it was really just nice and tidy in possession, never sort of looked like giving it away. His pressing's obviously something that we did know that he had, and he's reached another level with that in terms of looking more defensively stable and being part of a midfield that's really stable. So yeah, he's, you know, a different player to maybe what we thought we were getting, but a genuine option for Liverpool. And I think if he can stay fit, and that's the only question mark over him now, is can he stay fit? You know, the shirts is at the moment, I think it's going to be hard to knock him out of that midfield.
There's in the early exchanges, Kev, firstly, they were all intense, no more so than Sadio Mane, who was amongst the most intense people you've seen in your whole life for the first 10-15 minutes. And it was mildly concerned. I think sense prevails in the early exchange with Tierney, but I wasn't half thinking, Jesus, Sadio, you look like a walking second yellow here for a few minutes, because he was clattering round.
I said after 2.5 minutes when he got that first yellow, there's something up with him there. Ben John will put a great thing in his five things to watch. He's obviously been arguing with his babe before the match, and I thought, do you know what, you might be actually right there, because the first one he does is like, he just runs straight into the back of Bellerin, doesn't he? Just bundles him over, but the ball's not even anywhere near him. Then obviously he does the one where, and on first thought, I thought he's going to go here for that. It looked like an elbow, and then obviously it was more of a hand to the face, really. But it was, you wouldn't say it was un-Sadio Mane, like, because he definitely got that in him, but two in the first 90 seconds, you're like, fucking hell, Sadio, give us a break here, mate, come on, let's get a goal first before we start all this. But he's another one that grew into the game, and you could see he wasn't happy coming off, but I think he'd done that much and he'd put that much in that it was probably the right time to just say, right, let's have a little breather here, because you've got to remember we're playing every 3 days or every 4 days this season, and the second half, very much I thought Liverpool showed that they can save a lot of energy, and taking Mane off, he's never going to be like, oh yeah, nice one, yeah, I made us be coming off. But by the same token, no player's going to be like that, so you've got to sort of protect them. And his performance against Holden was verging on our ass.
Actually, just listening back, it's only just occurred to me, he takes him off because of the yellow, doesn't he? It's not to preserve him because of fitness, or it's because he didn't want to take him off before because he's so fucking good and you have to win the football match. But once it's all but won, he takes him off for that. It only just occurred to me.
It might have been that he wanted to do one of the three, and the tipping point becomes, well, you've got the yellow.
Yeah, of course. It's exactly that. Yeah, it's hard to remember a better Sadio performance in many ways, wasn't it? He was just, his pressing was unbelievable. You know, I love Arsenal and Arteta. They've got that big commitments to playing out from the back more than anyone you've ever seen. They're gonna play out from the back, but you just can't do that against Sadio Mane in that form. It's just ridiculous.
It wasn't just Mane with the press. The front three just sat and waited for when they had the ball. Arsenal, even in their own box, they sat and waited and waited and waited. And then when one thing happened, the front three went, and then the midfield three went behind them. And you just thought, fucking hell, if I was an Arsenal defender here, mate, I would be absolutely filling me undies. I'd just kick it into the cop, honestly. You'd absolutely shit yourself, wouldn't you? And a couple of times they did, but fair play to Arsenal, because they got out a couple of times, they struggled a little bit. There was a few sort of aimless balls towards the centre of the pitch, thinking, please, someone just get on the end of that. But if they do that to basically any other team in the league, probably barring City, they'll walk through a lot of teams, and that'll create a lot of goals for them. So I think that was brave of Arsenal, but it's brave to do it against Liverpool, because we are without doubt the best pressing team in the world.
It's brave to do it, and I don't mean this in a nasty way, because I think he plays well. It's brave to do it with Holding, and I think Liverpool had identified Holding, Dave, that they were going to get on him. Mane does it a couple of times, but there's something I noticed again looking at everything after the match. Van Dijk's range of passing's unreal, and he hits that one, that cross field one, over and over, and he gets it to Salah or Alexander-Arnold. But when he plays down Holding's channel, what I think's interesting was, I don't think he makes any of them, but he's not that bothered. I actually think it's deliberate. It's almost like, if Sadio gets it, great, but if not, now Rob Holding's got the ball, yeah, and he's got Sadio Mane running at him, second and goal. That's a whole new nightmare. And I think it's really interesting. We talk about those like passes, like successes and failures, whereas really, I think Van Dijk's more than happy if Rob Holding's got the ball on the edge of his own area.
Yeah, that's it. They wanted to put him in a position where he was this back to his own goal, trying to control the ball with Sadio Mane running at him angrily. And it happened loads, didn't it? He always, even if it was, you know, it was bouncing and Sadio had a chance to sort of get around the other side of him and stuff like that. He looked so uncomfortable. And I actually felt for him because there was a couple of moments where he pulled off a bit of defending and you were like, he's not a terrible player at all. But they clearly targeted him at that front three. And, you know, it's helpful when you've got someone like Van Dijk who you know, in pinging those long distance passes in the way that he does, he's got this knack of sort of looking like he's going to play it to one side and cutting across the ball, yeah, and it pinging out to the other side. And I thought that made both the centre-halves on either side feel really uncomfortable. They never knew until the last second whether it was coming onto their side, and then obviously what either they're going to control it and they've got Salah and Mane running at them, or, you know, it puts them in a difficult situation basically. And I thought that was a key part of Liverpool's success really last night, was putting those two under pressure either side.
It was a lot of doubt that Van Dijk's able to put in, and also just that bypass. And Arsenal were trying to do it as well. Ooh. And it's interesting, Arsenal were trying to do it. They break the press to a certain point, think they've sucked Liverpool and look to go left all the time. And that's what they were trying to do. And in the end, that's where the goal comes from. Not as though it was some sort of lovely move, but it's why they get into where they get in, Rob. But with Liverpool, I just thought, you know, it was this idea of, well, we're just going to bypass you, but also we're going to make the pitch enormous. And as Dave says, you don't know which way we're going to go. So not only is the pitch enormous, but you've got to be worried about the size of the pitch on both sides. And this is how suddenly now we're going to stretch you and stretch you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a hell of a weapon, Van Dijk. And, you know, we have had the peak of Gerrard and Alonso, we had that as a double weapon. And I used to annoy me slightly when people talked about Gerrard's Hollywood balls. I used to think, that's not a Hollywood ball. That's getting you up the pitch and over through several lines of players. But I think it's sort of, you could see a bit more of what the Thiago signing's about. Why, if you drop Fabinho in against Van Dijk, if a team decides we're going to close Van Dijk down at all costs, Fabinho can play those passes to a large degree. Thiago could slip between the two of them and play those passes. That is a key pass.
And Gomez carrying it away as, yeah, well. That's one of the things you notice in the second half. A couple of times when Arsenal think, well, we'll get it to Gomez and then we'll pressure Gomez. And Gomez isn't going to necessarily ping it 50 yards. But the thing he does, Rob, is he's quite happy to drop his shoulder. And at times, you have kittens watching it sometimes. Mm. But before you know where you are, there's two players behind him and he's now looking up and he can pass through midfield.
Yeah, but also people don't expect him to do that, so there's not as he's not got the direct pressure on him that others will have, and it's just another option. It's a brilliant, you know, it's a brilliant combination, isn't it, really, Van Dijk and Gomez in that sense.
The fullbacks, Kev, over the course of the game, and I think it's important to point out, Willian barely kicks it in our half. Very, very rarely gets on the ball. Aubameyang gets on it a little bit more, but by being a bit of a centre-forward playing on that side. And yet Robertson scores one. Arnold's involved in both goals that Liverpool score. And you're like, so, hang on. These lads who are playing wide aren't getting anything in our half, and we are dominating in this half with those footballers. I don't know how they managed to almost be in two different places at once.
I think what it was, you got the likes of your Keita doing the hard work for them. And as Dave said before, it's about cutting the passing lanes off as much as anything, as it was for Trent and Robertson to actually do the defending. The positioning was great, so it sort of prevents the ball getting there, so they don't necessarily have to do the defending. And I thought second half, it was noticeable that they stopped going forward. I don't know what their average positions were, and I might be proved wrong, but the second half, it was all of our attacking was just going through the middle. There was very little funnel out wide to come back in. And I think that was because Klopp and Liverpool have made the decision, okay, well, we've got where we need to be. We're not that scared of what Arsenal can do to us now. And if we do push forward, there is always the chance that ball, if it does break, one of the centre-halves can put the ball into that channel, and that's where we've been in trouble in the past. So I think it was just a yet another brilliant performance from the fullbacks, because they did what they needed to do first half, and they're the reason why we can go and absolutely overwhelm the team, because we've got an additional two attackers there that no other team has got. Some teams have got another one on one side, but it's easy to defend one on one side. You can't defend two going through there, and then with the players we've got in the middle as well. So, yeah, as you say, another brilliant performance. Trent's passing is unbelievable.
Henderson doesn't play last night, Rob. What I noticed, I think, from more Liverpool players, I think Henderson's very good at it. But what I thought that a few others did, Trent does it, Fabinho does it, it's the percentage ball a little bit. And in the first half when Liverpool were bang on top, it wasn't like, there's one I think in particular that ends up coming out to Sadio Mane, where I think Trent just hits it first time and he's putting it in a Sadio Mane-esque area, but he's not trying to pick him out as such. But it is that idea of, you're going to be terrified by this because the way it's going to arc down, it's going to cause chaos. I thought you saw Fabinho doing the same thing. And I think it's something which, there's a lot of, you know, when you watch a Arteta side or a Guardiola side, and there's other sides in a European football you watch, and what they're brilliant at is that precision over and over again. What I think Liverpool are actually really good at, and the front three are a massive part of it, but having the technique of someone like Trent is really important, is playing a really early, good percentage ball that a player can fight for. And if you've got Sadio Mane or Mo Salah, probably win and pin someone.
Yeah, this Liverpool side can mix it. You know, that's the asset. Klopp wants us to be masters of every art. He wants us to be a great set-piece team. He wants us to be... We play precision 1-2s. I mean, you look at the liquid football of the goal against Chelsea last week. But the percentage... One of the first honest football phrases that Klopp learnt when he came here, and, you know, when he was just getting involved with our jargon, was second ball. And he's always referenced second ball, because second ball is everything. If you're a gegenpressing team, you're all about the second ball. And if you can play a quality percentage ball, you're just winning. Because you're either you know, the pace and danger of the ball, because the percentage has worked out for you, it's created a chance, or if it doesn't, it's at least created panic, and it gives you that opportunity. Liverpool want to, as you were saying earlier with holding, Liverpool want to lose the football. This is one thing they never want to say out loud. It's got to the stage last season, a few of us, you know, I'm sure you were the same, that matches go, we've got a corner against us, this is our best chance. Yeah. And you weren't joking. You got to a point you realised you weren't joking. It is a genuine chance, because we can come out from this, especially as teams have got deeper and deeper against us. And again, I noticed that I know we always reference, and I hate the fact that they're the marker and the benchmark on this one, but Ferguson's teams, when teams were deeper and deeper against them, they played a lot of percentage as well. That Beckham was the greatest percentage ball player I think I saw in that era. And we've got it now with Trent and others.
There's something that happens within amongst all of that, Dave, where it is this idea of, you're going to drop deep, but we're actually going to force you further back. And we're going to get you playing strange angles that you don't want to play at. And I think, again, in the first half in particular, that happens to Arsenal. The number of times you almost get the impression the players aren't comfortable with where the bodies have ended up. There's Arsenal players twisted one way or the other and having a tiny little look and just trying to deal. And I think there's something about this Liverpool side where, again, in amongst all of that, it's also trying to create a really good opportunity. So it isn't like Liverpool are peppering the Arsenal goal. It's like, no, we just keep the ball alive, because in a minute, the Andy Robertson chance will come.
Yeah, I think the shout there about body position is interesting. If there's one small upside to sort of the no fans being in and being able to listen to what the managers and the players are saying, is that you realise how much body position is a trigger for the press. You know, a moment where an Arsenal player takes the ball slightly side on and looks at uncomfortable, there's a moment where there's a shout, let's go. You know, they know when... Because you know what it feels like when you receive the ball in an uncomfortable position, they know that that's an important moment to press on. And then, yeah, once they regain the ball from those positions, they're usually in, you know, they don't just chance it and try and fling it in the, you know, fling it in the box straight away or anything like that. It's, you know, there's an element that then of patience and control and pushing Arsenal back and then finding your gap. It's just a team that's capable of doing literally everything in a. We can see that in the performances they did so far this season and all through the last couple of seasons, really. They've literally got everything.
It's the detail stuff for me, Dave, that I think is interesting there. For instance, when you mention the body position stuff, you get the impression there's lots of different ways to be well coached, and you get the impression, you know, you've got to be careful not to, you know, Liverpool are incredible, so you've got to be careful that you don't just end up praising everything. But I sort of think that they're well coached in all the bits you can be well coached in. So the amount of information that they've got there. So the body position one's a really interesting one. It's fascinating to me that with the shift, and the manager goes out of his way when he's having the nonsense thing with Roy Keane to talk about the offsides thing after the match, where Liverpool feel like they're very on top of the rules. They're on top of every detail. Liverpool haven't been caught yet with one of these daft handballs. They've had them work in their favour. You get the impression that you name a detail within the game and Liverpool's players have been given the information in a manner that has meant they've taken it on board. Intelligent football is intelligent coaching. Liverpool look, and it's a really mad thing to say about a footy team, they just look really well informed.
Yeah, 100%. Even, you know, the ones where Arsenal got in behind a couple of times where they were offside and... Van Dijk knew it every time. He was 100%, wasn't he, was jogging back in. He knew 100% that no matter where that ball ended up, if the cross came in or it ended up in the back of the net, he knew when they were offside. And they are aware of the details. They know exactly where everyone is. They're so fully aware where each other are and things like that. And yeah, we know about the level of detail in this coaching team, the things that they look into, the throwing coach, things like that, that other teams aren't doing. So the fact that goes into the way they deal with offsides and new rules and talk about things like that, it's no surprise to see that they're completely across that, because that is the way that this organisation is run at the moment. It's just elite level, tiny details making the difference, things like that. They're huge on it, yeah.
Sorry, just on that offside thing, it's interesting that, because this raised its head very beginning of last season in the Super Cup. Do you remember when Chelsea, Pulisic, I think, in particular, ran through us quite a few times? And there was a sense around the game, like the commentary, Chelsea have really got in behind Liverpool. And Klopp was at pains afterwards to go, no, they didn't. Mm-hmm. We caught them offside. That's just the rule. And I thought at that moment, because you could tell at the early stage of last season, you'd probably stepped up another 5 or 7 yeah. yards on the previous season. We were really playing the offside law. And you thought, this is a key moment here. Do we begin to bottle this? Because psychologically, Klopp can say, and we can say, oh, we like, it's the rule. But defenders do not like seeing people run beyond them, keepers making last-ditch saves. It feels real in that moment. It's a lived experience. But Klopp, I think, had the bottle to imbue in his men, do not look at the background noise. This is important. They're offside.
It's all of us men as well, because there was a game last year where our last man was Divock Origi, and he'd done exactly the same thing as everybody else did when everyone stepped up. We held the line perfectly, and that goes to show you, it's easy saying to Virgil van Dijk and Joe Gomez, listen, you're going to play 50 games at centre-half, this is what you need to do. It's a lot more difficult to say to Divock Origi, who's not used to playing offside, he's used to trying to fight against it, this is what I want you to do, and you've got to do it perfectly, because if you're the one that holds this up, you're going to be in trouble. And every single player in the Liverpool squad, not just the first team, knows exactly when to do it. And I think it backs up Neil's point that we're the most intelligent team in the league, probably got the most intelligent manager. And any time there's any 1% that we can eke out of something, this handball thing, for instance, the offside thing with VAR, we go out and take it. And that just bodes well for every player that comes through, like from Curtis Jones, Harvey Elliott, Diogo Jota, because they're going to get all of that knowledge imbued into them as well. And that's just, you can't fail to improve if you've got stuff like that.
There's something in part of this, Kev, come back to you on it. One of the things that I think actually happens with the two one-on-ones is that the first one wouldn't have counted. He's off. He's clearly off. Van Dijk knows he's off. Everyone knows he's off. The second one, he is actually just on. Trent is a little behind the line at that point, and he is on.
The better one?
The one. And then I think there's something there, but even that works for us, and listen, some days it won't. You know, if Lacazette had dinked Alisson the first time and then dinked him the second time, maybe it'd be a little bit different. But what actually ends up happening is, I don't know, I think that Alisson's in Lacazette's head from the first one. That when he gets through the second time, because Lacazette has an almost switched his brain back to going, well, that doesn't count anyway. You would have been offside. It doesn't count anyway. The next one's a new day. Instead, it's like he goes and it's like, oh, it's this fella again. And I think it's really interesting how that ends up working for Liverpool. When we talk about that attention to detail stuff, yes, there's a bit of this which is accidental. But my word, it's tremendous goalkeeping on both occasions.
Alisson's got every single striker, not just in the league but in the world, thinking that exact same thing. That's why we often mention it on shows, that every goal that goes in against Liverpool seems to have to be either an absolute cock-up like we've had yesterday with Andy Robbo, but if it's a striker going to score, they have to try and postage stamp it. And if your percentage is like, what, 5% of the goal, you're going to miss a lot of chances, because you don't need to actually put it there. And as you said there, it's because he's in strikers' heads. Strikers run through and think, oh my god, how am I going to get past this absolute monster? And he's no bigger than Simon Mignolet was. He's just better at positioning himself, and it's all about his footwork. I keep saying it, he makes saves that he doesn't even have to dive for sometimes, that other goalkeepers would have to throw themselves at, because his footwork is absolutely perfect. And when he comes out yesterday, the two chances, the one where he tries to dink him, I think Lacazette is probably half thinking, I am offside here. So it was a bit of a team effort anyway. But even though the second one, Lacazette is thinking, what am I going to do with this? Where if it was any other goalkeeper in the world, he'd have gone, easy, this, the goalkeeper's all the way out here and I'm going to score. But because it's him, he sort of gets caught in too much. He doesn't put it low, he doesn't put it high, and in the end it's a decent save for Alisson to me.
Yeah, I think it's Carragher afterwards makes the Demba Ba comparison with Mignolet, doesn't he? Which is a bit harsh, I think, but I'm up for that comparison. Always will never stop blaming Mignolet for letting in a reasonable goal. But yeah, but you know, you're absolutely right. I didn't realise, is Alisson not bigger than Mignolet? It feels like he's a good 30-40% bigger. No. Just his arms, his legs, his head.
Same size.
The
same
beard.
Yeah, it does. You know, you look at him and I hate, you know, it's a cliche comparison, the Schmeichel making yourself big thing, but he does feel a bigger presence. You think, you know, if in your mind's eye, you transpose Loris Karius in there, even take away the Loris Karius's faults, he's just a spindlier man. You know what I mean? And I feel he just doesn't feel spindly. He just feels like he's a big, like, he feels like a Grizzlies run on the pitch and standing in the way and you don't know what to do. He just is very big. And he doesn't. But then again, you look at him in ordinarily, you go, he's not a heavy, it's not like he's bulky, but it's mad.
They get that chance, the one that's offside, then there's the one that pretty close afterwards, and then I think Dave, Liverpool in that second half batten down the hatches. Mane has the pirouetted attempt up the other end, Liverpool then. Arsenal don't have another shot, is my point. They don't get to have another shot. They don't even get to sort of decide to blam one from 30 yards. They do not get another shot. I think Lacazette half gets in once and crosses poorly, tamely. And whilst you're in your emotions in the game, you're thinking, oh, well, this is still in the balance. The actual reality was after that second Lacazette chance, Liverpool do just go a bit more compact and say, you're not getting anything.
That's it. Liverpool, they don't let the offside chance get in the head because they're completely, you know, attuned to sort of just blanking those out. But they also don't even let the one that was legitimately onside get in the head either. And it was just sort of, you know, almost use that to sort of say, wake up, right? Like, come on, let's see this out. You know, it'd be an absolute travesty if Arsenal had got anything out of that game, to be honest, because Liverpool were so dominant, even though the scoreline was so close for so long. And yeah, I just think Liverpool upped it, but in a different way to what we'd seen throughout the match. I thought Liverpool were more sort of dominant in a different way towards the back end of that match. They're very sensible about managing game state, aren't they? They know, you know, I've spoken to Pep Linders about this in the past, about what they do when they're up later in games. It's more passes to try and make the goal rather than the, you know, the short and sharp stuff that they do early on when they're trying to get ahead. We just saw a lot more of that and just a real control of Arsenal. They couldn't get near. It's, you know, you saw Liverpool a lot more having the ball amongst the centre halves and just playing it into the, you know, the number six position and back again and back to the goalkeeper. You know, it's just another element of football that they've mastered over the last couple of seasons. You know, complete ability to take the sting out of the game whenever they need to.
I thought it was interesting on about 60-61 that Liverpool were prepared to take that result and protect it. Mm. I think they showed Arsenal the right amount of respect. I don't know if we're talking just after the incident with Lacazette's chances, but there was a point in which we're going, they're not the rubbish Arsenal of last year where you could have got four or five absolute gilt edge ones on the break.
Oh, they kept going at them in past seasons, weren't they? 100%.
Yeah, you'd have gone,
we've got them here.
They're a bottom half of the table team, effectively. You're going to win 4 or 5-1. You're better off putting it to bed. Here was, there was, no, we do think we can get this next goal, but the priority is not to concede the next goal. And I thought that was really mature.
Yeah,
I think that helps as well with the thought of playing every 3 or 4 days. You can rest in possession, can't you? Mm. As you said there, Dave, about the centre-half passing to the number six passing it back. And if you do that for 30 or 40 seconds, no one's really moving. And Arsenal don't want to push you there because they know if they try and press us there, it's going to take one pass and we're right through the middle of them and then we can get the third goal. So it's almost like Arsenal have to play dead because they've got no other choice. They can come and try and attack us, but they know, well, it's like poking the bear. We can't really do that. And that ability to be able to take a game against what is probably going to be a top four finishing team this season, and from 61 minutes just say, okay, well, nothing's really going to happen now. And you'd imagine the savings in the legs, if you can do that 10 times in a season, that's going to prevent injuries later on.
And there's also a saving, Kev, in terms of one of the things that happens there is everyone, after the second Lacazette miss, I think that there's a sense where Arsenal are almost thinking, well, all right, let's have a big goal last five. We're almost happy with 2-1 last five and we throw a bit of kitchen sink at it. And I think that almost both sides fall into that a little bit. But I think the trick is Liverpool are really happy with that. They're actually happy than the opposition. The opposition should start to rethink that sort of stuff. The best thing that Arsenal could have done was possibly go kitchen sink around 70 to 75 and then say, well, if we get whacked, we get whacked. But I think that's a really hard mentality to get. And at the minute for this Arsenal side, probably the one thing that Arteta didn't want to do was get whacked at Anfield like many of his predecessors have.
That decision sort of, that might get them points in other games because they don't lose they don't lose the confidence in it. But if they do go for it between 60 and 70, say, or 15 minutes around that time, they've got much more of a chance of trying to get something out of the game. Because I think to say, oh, what we'll do is we'll keep it at 2-1 and we'll really go for it in the last 5 minutes, that's a total coward's option against Liverpool, because that, I'm not going to say it's never going to work, because once in a blue moon someone might get the goal that gets the equaliser, but I don't think it's going to happen very often. And
And also, there's a chance Liverpool make it 3-1, which is what happens.
Not just a chance. That's inevitable, I think. If you go kitchen sink against Liverpool and we're winning 2-1, you better score your first chance, mate, because otherwise you're going to be in some serious trouble. And I think if he really wanted to go for a point, the middle of the second half, where it sort of calmed down a little bit and we were trying to take total control of the game, was the time to have a go at it. Because if you do it then, and as you say, if you get whacked, you get whacked. But if you leave it for the last 5 minutes, I think you're all but admitting that, okay, we'll take a 2-1 here.
Do you not think, I was surprised how late he left the bulk of the substitutions, because I felt we were, leggy's not the right word, we put so much into it. In the beginning phase of the game, just as at Chelsea, I thought, to live with us and to be quite tight and compact, as Chelsea were, and Arsenal were relatively tight and compact in that first half, they're going to get punished second half as the game opens up a bit. But actually, we put so much in, we dominated, we created so many chances. I'm not saying they certainly weren't fitter than us, but I don't think we were free running in the second half. And the changes, well, they did come and they did help.
Do you think there's something with him, Robin, that where he's trying to balance it between, this is a very intense game of football and we're managing it pretty well. So if I throw someone in, because I agree with you, it was one of them where I suspect the supporters, and especially if we'd been in the ground, from about 65, we'd have all been going, make a change, make a change, make a change. Mm. Whereas I think he's thinking, you know what, this is a really going to be a tough game to get the pace off. It's going to be a really tough game just to come into and get your role. And these lads have got the roles right now. So I think he's almost leaving it until the last possible minute. And he does that sometimes, I think, especially in bigger games, where I'm thinking, just put some energy on. He's thinking, no, everyone's in rhythm. He uses that a lot. Everyone's in rhythm here. I'll stick with this until the last possible moment.
Yeah, it's very old school, that. I mean, I'm always something that struck with me. Bob Paisley ism, or not ism, but an adage about Bob Paisley. Liverpool are playing Sunderland, mid-80s. They're 1-0 up at home. It's after a European game. It's a tired second half performance. The crowd are screaming for a substitution. And Paisley makes it, but he takes off his most energetic performer, Craig Johnston, who hadn't played in the week, because he felt he was pushing them on too far. That, you know, it would have just pulled the game in the wrong direction. And I also think there is... I often do wonder with managers, they will say they want... What you've suggested, that they want to keep the alchemy, really, that it's working. Everything's in synchronicity, so don't disrupt that rhythm. I do wonder if there's an element of superstition about it.
Of course, yeah.
I have to be honest with you, it's deep within their psyches. You know, if I fuck around with this now.
No, with that 100%. I mean, it's human, isn't it? I mean, yeah. It's the most human thing. This thing is working. Why am I changing this thing as it works?
On a tightrope.
I think part of his thinking as well would have been that the midweek that's coming up is a League Cup and not a Champions League game. So it's going to be a completely different 11. He knows that the majority of that team there can take a rest now till Aston Villa. And,
sure,
you know, he can put out the likes of Shaqiri in the League Cup. So I think that would probably play into his thinking a little bit, and he didn't feel like he needed to sort of force it until the end. And Liverpool, you know, they weren't really looking uncomfortable, were they? So I suppose I think that for him would have probably been an easy decision to just, let's just see where we get towards the last 10 minutes and then start making a couple of the changes if necessary.
He'll be as pleased as we are, I'd like to think, about Schotter's performance, Dave, in that it felt like we didn't really miss a beat. And I'm going to sound critical of a footballer who's done brilliantly for Liverpool, and I don't mean to, because I think he's also been a valuable substitute. But when Origi comes on, he makes it different. One way or another, yeah, it becomes different when Origi's on, and sometimes it could become different and it works for Liverpool, and sometimes it can become different and it doesn't. What I thought was really interesting about when Schotter comes on is that it isn't different. It's just more of the same. It's more of poor Rob Holding being absolutely just ragged everywhere. And as I say, I think he does really well in the 90 minutes, given everything that he had to deal with. But suddenly then Mane comes off and he might think, thank God for that. And then Schotter comes on and within 2 minutes he's thinking, God, I'm not getting any rest.
Yeah, it's the thing that Liverpool haven't had over the past couple of seasons. The thing they've been criticised for is not having a like-for-like replacement on the wings, you know, not just Origi, but Shaqiri isn't really a sort of a similar fit to those, the Salah and Mane.
Or even since Minamino's come in since January, when he's been dropped into one of those areas, yeah, it's not been the same.
And they've played Oxlade-Chamberlain there in games, yeah, as well, and I've never quite liked that either. So to have a real genuine like-for-like replacement, and he did look like that, not just his goal threat, but, you know, Jürgen said after the match, he's only got 20% of the information he needs to sort of play this system. But I thought his pressing was yeah, you know, really impressive in that last 10 minutes. Sort of looked like he'd been watching the game from the bench and seeing how it was done, and, you know, really looked like he knew what he was doing. So and to get the goal. You know, I think he had 5 touches in the box, 3 shots in 10 minutes, obviously gets the goal. Salah nicks one off him in a way that he was just wouldn't have dared do to Mane.
I said the mood he was in.
Could have had a hat-trick. Absolutely right. It's mad, isn't it? And you see, I remember the very first few Salah games of the pre-season friendlies, before we realised Salah was absolutely world-class, and we just thought, oh, he's a good signing him. But the key thing you saw was he's arriving between the posts. I mean, his first couple of goals are, well, he scores against Watford on his proper debut and it's his following in a Firmino shot. But you saw it in pre-season, a few tap-ins. I know it's better than a tap in the shot, but you can see Jota there. He's arrived. That's what he's got most in common with him. I think, I mean, I'm not, Jesus Christ, burdening him with false expectation, but I think what they're seeing him is probably similar to what they saw in Mo Salah back there. Not to say the same trajectory, but it's a similar skill set. I imagine statistically not miles apart. Will work hard, will press, can be explosive and run at people, will arrive between the posts. I reckon it's probably a similar sort of scouting report.
He gets the goal, and I'm pleased he's got the goal, Kev. I mean, it's not the winner, but it kills the game. But there's something about it where now he can have a couple of weeks where if he doesn't score again, it's all right. And I think that's always been my worry when Liverpool. But when you buy a, when Liverpool especially, I always remember Peter Crouch, and he's an extreme example. But when Liverpool buy a forward, and then he doesn't get a goal for God knows how long, it can become something that everyone talks about. Well, it's fine. He's got one now, so if he doesn't get one for the next 3 or 4 appearances, well, we'll just wait. There'll be another.
Yeah, and he looks like a confident lad. I don't think he. He's probably thinking that wasn't a worry for me. I was always going to score in the first couple of games. But you're right, because that brought to mind then when you were speaking on was Rian Brewster. The amount of games he's played in teams where you think he's definitely going to score. Yeah, like that 5-all against Arsenal last year, and he doesn't get one.
Yeah.
And then it becomes a thing where, as you say, with Jota out, that's over, and possibly could have had another one. And as you say, if Salah had done to Mane what he'd done to him, mate. Mane would definitely have got sent off, let's put it that way. But yeah, Jota is exactly what we've
been
needing.
By the way, the ball for the one that he misses from Salah is unreal. Yeah. It's unreal.
It's absolutely lovely, and it's played just perfectly inside poor Rob Holding again. The poor lad's got no chance, but he's exactly what we've been needing. I think we've all said it, Divock Origi is a Liverpool legend, but as you said there, when he comes on, you can't play the same formation, or you can play the same formation, but you can't play the same style of football. With Diogo Jota, he's going to be able to go and play in that front three, probably in the two positions that aren't Firmino's, and do the job for you that you need to do. And sometimes that's all we need. Just when it's not working for Mane, or it's not working for Salah, which is rare, but you can put someone else in there and it's just a little different spark. I think he's a great turn.
Praise the front three, all of them. Firmino's movements is electric throughout, Rob. Mane, remarkably intense, gets the goal. Salah, range of passing in there. Just last little thing, we've done Keita, but I do want to say Fabinho to me was integral first half. He set that tone brilliantly, and then Wijnaldum I thought was terrific second. I thought he grew and grew into the game and was pretty close to electrifying. I felt in the second half the number of times he was the most dynamic, the most aggressive. I think it was an interesting pacing of both of those performances.
Yeah, they're different, but they're both incredible assets to us. Fabinho's, I'm loath to say he's a strange footballer, but what I mean been suggesting it is that when he's off the boil, he can look quite he can dip quite substantially. But when he's on it, he's fucking world class. Why isn't he Brazil's first pick? He's incredible, and I thought he was at times incredible last night. Wijnaldum, yeah, I totally agree with you. Again, don't want to tempt fate, but I think he's going to have a big season, mainly because he doesn't need any more motivation, does he? But I think he'd like to emerge as a player the world wants by the end of the season. He's going to back himself to be the footballer he has become.
I think with Wijnaldum, it's interesting again, Dave, again in that second half, it felt to me like he was more advanced. It felt to me like he was more involved in an attacking centre, more advanced. Not quite as much as Chelsea, where he has the most shots, but it seemed like he was very final third and prominent in a way that in games like that in the past, not to rate performances one against the other, but where you've come away from the game at times not entirely clear what he's been up to. You knew exactly what he was up to second half.
Yeah, without a doubt. It's funny that seems to be a thing this season. After a summer where there was talk of him maybe going to Barcelona, where he would have been given a role, where he'd have had more freedom in the way that he has for Holland. And Liverpool have added Thiago, who's, you know, a real good shout to play a lot of games at the number six position. So, you know, it gives Wijnaldum that sort of freedom to do that, and we know he's capable of doing it. So it's interesting that Klopp seems to sort of be more willing to play him in those positions and encourage him to get further forward. And we know he's got the quality. We've not really seen it as much at Liverpool as we've seen it, you know, in recent years, certainly. But we've seen it for his international team in recent years. And I think it's just, it's another quality player doing quality things. And Liverpool's options in midfield are an absolute joke now, really. When you see Fabinho at Chelsea playing like he did at centre half, and then you're almost thinking, well, oh, maybe he is an option there. He's, maybe more than fourth choice in that position. But then in midfield yesterday, just incredible, so dominant, physically so good on the ball, so good in tight spaces, knows where everyone is, knows when he's getting pressed. It's like, what does Liverpool's first choice midfield look like anymore?
It's really hard to pick it, isn't it? Because you go, Thiago and Henderson would be a good start in picking a midfield three, wouldn't they? A really good start. It is really, really crazy. It's funny how it's the Thiago sort of it feels like it's gilded the lily. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It was a good midfield, but the word used around football would be it's a workmanlike midfield, damning it with faint praise. Mm. I don't know. Somehow Thiago creates an aura of respect for the rest of them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Thiago respects playing.
Even though
guys.
He wasn't there yesterday.
Yeah, he wasn't. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm kidding myself, but it feels like that to me. Yeah. And I think football sense it like that.
There's sort of an aspect of that, but the other one that's an aspect of that which brings on to Arsenal on Thursday is also Curtis Jones, Rob.
Oh,
and that's,
Jesus, yeah.
That's, you know, that's the next phase of this, which is that Jones doesn't get on yesterday, and I suspect if Liverpool had made it three earlier, he actually might have done. The manager might have gone for Jones rather than Milner. Whilst it's a 2-1, he goes for Milner, and that's, you know, perfectly sensible. But, you know, who do we think we're getting on Thursday? What's your Liverpool team? Because I was trying to pick it before.
It's tough.
It is tough.
It's really tough. I started with the names who he feels duty-bound and wants to pick in the League Cup. People may say there's a case for other players playing, but I think Harvey Elliott is nailed on. I think he's promised him the slot. Curtis, he's promised him and he's obviously earned it. Minamino would fall into that. Minamino and Jota now would fall into that category. So the front three, I think, I'm not quite saying it picks itself, but I think it's Jota, Minamino as the withdrawn striker, and Harvey Elliott.
You don't think you'll do Origi?
No, I don't. Because there's too many options. Then what he does in midfield is interesting. Does he go for a three, or does he make it... You could say, I'm thinking Milner and Jones are my first two, and I think he might go Gruch again out of respect for the fact that Arsenal's team will be no slouches despite being a second team. So I think Shaqiri and Origi will miss out as starters. The defence is the one that's confusing. Okay, anyway, we can all pick the fullbacks, but centre-back, I think he might surprise again. He might pick Gomez and Fabinho. I think he might just pick the two of them, looking to win the game and get one of them off. But I think he might go stronger. I think Van Dijk will have the night off, but I think he could go those two, or at least one of them.
I'd say one of them. I don't think he'll go with the two. I think the young kid who played there, Reece Williams, sorry. I think he'll get the game again because he played really well and he gave him the praise after it. The other interesting one is Billy Kometi, who obviously played against the City, didn't he, on Sunday? So there was only a knock that kept him out of the Lincoln game, so he's an option there as well. So I think he'll want to play at least one of those young kids because he doesn't... Definitely not both, but what I mean is I think you've got to remember he doesn't care about the League Cup. I think he sees it mostly as an inconvenience. Even now, when I think most fans are looking at it going, a couple more weeks and we could be in the quarterfinals of this thing here and the semi-finals coming up. But I just think Klopp sees it as more of an option to blood players rather than something he's aiming to win.
I think if these games had come the other way around, if it'd been Arsenal and then Lincoln Arsenal League Cup and then Lincoln League Cup, I think we'd be looking at Liverpool in the quarterfinals. I think it's a little different this day because I think he wanted to get a result against Lincoln because I think he wanted to get the game. I think he, as much as anything else, as much as he wants a progression in the tournament, I think he literally wanted another game of football for some of these fringe players.
Exactly.
That is no longer a thing after this. The quarterfinals of this are the midweek before Boxing Day. That's how far away it is now. So we win this, we don't play in this competition again until the midweek before Boxing Day. Mm. And that is the midweek before Boxing Day. You can imagine what the Liverpool manager thinks about playing that night. So I am intrigued. Like, I think obviously you'll want to win the game and while the game's going on, but it does sort of throw open a couple of questions about selection. But it is worth pointing out, you know, we talk about this Liverpool squad now. There's a couple of injuries, and yet Rob's making a case for Divock Origi and Sheridan Shaqiri not starting the EFL Cup fourth round at home.
I still think he needs the games. I think as poorly timed as that is, I can't believe that I didn't know that. As poorly timed as that is, I think he'll still even possibly need the game because if, you know, at the moment, Divock Origi doesn't look like there's going to be much interest in moving him on. If Liverpool got a decent offer, they would sell him. But I don't think that's going to happen before the end of the window. Shaqiri's another one. Not even heard a sort of rumour around interest from anyone. you know, again, Liverpool would sell him if they could, but it's, it, you know, they're not going to push him out the door if something doesn't come. I don't think it's going to be a case of try and get him out on loan somewhere. So I think they need this competition. I think they need the games. Oxlade-Chamberlain's not even in the squad at the moment.
So just on the need the game argument.
Here's why you're wrong.
No. I'll come back to 1 second. Just on the need the game argument. Like right now, we can sit here and say that if Liverpool win against Arsenal, they will play, barring international breaks, every weekend and every midweek until whether or not they got through that game. So the semi-finals of this are the 5th or 6th of January. So they will be playing every weekend and every midweek. So think about what that does to his training time, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I take your sort of your general point, but it is worth putting that out. And then if they got through, let's say they get the final of this, what it means is they play every weekend and every midweek until the 3rd week of February.
Yeah.
I think the Liverpool manager will have views.
He would want, I suppose he'd want it if Gruitch, Origi and Shaqiri don't secure their moves before October 6th. Otherwise, yeah, then maybe he'd take a view on it.
He did show, though, we hit that mad 10-day period before last Christmas. We had the World Club thing, the League Cup semi-final, league game, Leicester the other side, can't remember, with Watford beforehand. It all looked ridiculous. How's he going to manage it, the League Cup, and you know, it'll still take his time up. Yeah. He just went, fuck it. It's still better. I'm not going to be there. My third choice coach is going to be there, and the kids are going to be there.
Yeah.
He just went...
Played you centre forwards?
Yeah. He still, nobody noticed. He still went, it's still better than nothing. It still gave Harvey Elliott a start. I think Harvey Elliott starts. It still gives you a game. And I think he's thinking, you know what? Harvey's a kid who we took away from first team regular. He could have been playing every week for bloody Norwich City by now, right?
My argument isn't he wants to lose the game. Not my argument. Saying.
But even though there's a gap, he wants Harvey Elliott to come out of this season to go, do you know what? I started 4 or 5 games and I got on 4 or 5 times. I'm happy to stay another season. I'm not pushing for a loan. I'm not plagued with discontent. Yep. He's not the only one. Nico, to an extent. Maybe even Curtis, I'll use the expression, gild the lily again. It'll give him another 4 or 5 games on top of the series of frustrating substitute appearances he might have to make. Well, it depends. Curtis is a really important case in point. Curtis is banging on that door, but he's banging against the 5 glorious midfielders we talked about. And if we don't have injuries, it's really hard for him.
The League Cup is arguably Curtis's only guaranteed starts this season.
I really disagree with that. I really, because we're gonna play it from where we play Everton to when we play City. 2 quite significant football matches, both away from home.
Yeah.
I'm sure we would all agree. We're playing 7 League and Champions League games in that run. I'm saying right now Curtis is getting 2 starts.
Maybe
he's getting Sheffield United and West Ham at Anfield on both of them, but I'm saying right now he's getting 2 starts. I'm saying that he will not have any... No one's going to be playing 6 of those 7 from a Liverpool point of view. I think that in that midfield, Fabinho might get 5, Thiago might get 5.
So many options, though. I know. The idea that you even need to go to Curtis in that situation...
You don't have to.
I don't think you even get near that.
No, but I think Curtis is... I think you're saying needs to go toward Curtis.
I think Curtis is below...
I think Oxlade-Chamberlain's below Curtis.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So I think Curtis is not only pushing, knocking on the door. I think once he gets a game as well...
I think he's got his feet up.
But once he gets a game, he's not... It's exactly like you said before about Curtis having a shirt now and you've got to dislodge him. Curtis Jones is going to be like, well, listen, I played, I was fucking brilliant and I want to play again. So get someone to take the shirt off me if that's the case. I agree with Neil. I think Curtis Jones has got not only starts but goals in him as well. He's going to play the season with me. I think he's a great player.
The conversation we're going to have around Curtis Jones, and I hope we're going to have loads, is just where you play him and what the team sets up. I think you're going to end up saying, are we actually building the team around Curtis Jones here? Because he does almost cry out to be in a 4-2-3-1.
I think we're building a team around. I think it's the idea that in some games, I think it's going to be 2, like Keita's plays. So there's going to be, I think it's going to be 2 of Henderson, Keita, Fabinho and Thiago. 2 of them. And then it's going to be 1 of Jones, Wijnaldum and Oxlade-Chamberlain.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And that's how he's going to break it down. And Milner to do a bit of both and a lot of work from the bench. A lot of coming on last 15s, last 20s and doing bits and pieces within there. And then that's the direction I think they're going to go in.
Putting Wijnaldum in that bracket, though, is interesting. Because he was the midfielder who played the most last season.
And the one who played the deepest as well.
Yeah.
But I think where they've ended up is, that's why I think it's interesting he's further forward again.
Yeah.
And I think that's where he's going to end up. And it might be that, listen, I'm doing that like it's hard and fast. I don't think it is. But that's sort of where I think they'll go and then adapt as and when people get knocks. Because I think the other thing is, I don't think anyone's playing in the heart of that Liverpool midfield, apart from possibly Manchester City away, and we'll see what the Champions League group brings us, but apart from Manchester City away, if they're not 100%. I think that the options gives you is the idea of, don't worry about it, you just put your feet up for this one. That's fine, you rest, you recuperate. We need you spot on for November and December. The other lads can play.
I think the interesting thing is, say we hadn't had the pandemic and someone like Jadon Sancho had been affordable, Jadon Sancho wouldn't be arriving to do little but cameos like Jota maybe have to prepare to do. There would have been some sort of move towards a 4-2-3-1 more often than not. But I think, although there isn't one player maybe of that profile, the combination of Jota, Minamino and now Curtis Jones, and all not exactly the same player, but there's a similarity, all bashing on the door, really. Jota by dint of the fee we paid, Minamino by his improving quality, Curtis Jones the same. You kind of think, we've got to find a way to get one of these lads in starting fairly regularly. I know you're right, you're absolutely right, with the repetition of games, they should get games. But it sort of goes beyond that. You almost feel you need to get one of them in your first choice 11.
Well, you don't buy three of them, or you don't. Well, we bought two and we're developing another one. You don't buy the two and have one coming through if that's not your plan overall, is it? It's not an accident that we've managed to get three players who were pushing for the first team in that very position. So
all tens of sorts.
Yeah. So it's obvious that Klopp is, that's the way he's going to go, and it's. Don't forget, he lost the number 10 in Coutinho and never replaced him. I think originally he was going to replace him with Fekir, wasn't he? Then he realised, we don't really need to do that anymore. And I think now it's just another development in the team. He's thinking, a number 10 is going to be, in the next couple of seasons, something that we need to go for. So I'd be very surprised if we don't start seeing at least one of those starting on a regular occasion, because otherwise, why have we got three of them?
I think we will see them. Are we going to beat Arsenal?
On Thursday? Yeah, why not? We win games, don't we? That's what we do.
We're going to beat Arsenal?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think the drop-off in quality between Arsenal's second team and Liverpool's second team, I think Liverpool will put the stronger side out and they should win because they're at home.
We're going to beat Arsenal?
Yep, count me in.
Count you in for beating Arsenal?
Yep.
You're all in. Just for information's sake, Arsenal's side for the League Cup game against Leicester, they did put Leno in goal. It was a pretty strong Arsenal side. I'll run it through for you. It was Leno in goal, Rob Holding, Luiz, Kolasinac, Maitland-Niles, Willock, Elneny, Saka, Pepe, Nketiah and Nelson. So they may well be a bit stronger than the idea that they make a number of changes. I think it'll be a really, really good game of football, but then so was the one on Monday night. Thank you very much for listening to the Anfield Wrap this week. We'll be back with the Weekender. Lots of fantastic writing. Do think about subscribing if you haven't. It's theanfieldwrap.com/subscribe. Thank you very much to, in no particular order, Liverpool Football Club, Dave Lynch, Rob Gutman and Kev Walsh. It's been an absolute pleasure. Sports Social Podcast Network.